This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Major News with Major Garrett, our weekly conversation with CBS's chief Washington correspondent.
Chris and Amy on KMOX on this Thursday. It is September 11th, 24th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. And we also are discussing what happened yesterday in Utah with the shooting and killing of Charlie Kirk, the conservative talk show host and activist. And we are now happy to be talking with CBS News Chief Washington correspondent. He is the host of The Takeout, a podcast you can watch and listen to, CBS News 24/7. Major Garrett is with us on KMOX. How are we doing, Major?
Good morning. Morning, everyone.
So what is your feeling now? I mean, obviously, you have been doing a lot of thought about what happened yesterday. Amy and I have been talking about the direction the country is going and what this could potentially mean. And you always seem to have a way to put things very succinctly. So as you see and think about what happened yesterday, what is your feeling today?
I'm still sick to my stomach, as I was yesterday when the news first broke. And I'm devastated for everyone who was there. They were witness to a public assassination, a murder in full public view. Everyone who was there will be traumatized by that event and what they witnessed for the rest of their lives. On my show last night, we talked to a gentleman named Christian Overton. He was there with a 17-year-old son. They were very close. I heard in his voice a sense of disbelief and a sense of horror. And that's shared by everyone who was there. This is an event for those people that will never be able to be properly absorbed or contextualized or explained. For our broader American community, it's deeply traumatic. And it calls upon all of us to ask a lot of hard questions that don't have easy answers. Most hard questions don't, but these hard questions stubbornly do not have easy answers. The simple kind of facile question is, how did we get here? Well, gradually, incrementally. How do we get back? Guess what? Gradually, incrementally, we have to, as a country, as a society, begin to dial back the temptations that lead us to label in the most harsh terms imaginable and think that that doesn't leave a larger echo. It does leave a larger echo, psychically and otherwise. And we have been seeing a spasm of political violence and politically motivated and politically adjacent violence in our country rising. It's not the worst it's ever been. I'm young enough to remember the late 60s in which we had a president assassinated, a civil rights leader assassinated, the brother of that president assassinated, all in and around politics, all massively traumatizing events for our country that left many in this country in the late 60s wondering if we would ever survive as a country. So I don't want to suggest that this is more catastrophic than it's ever been, but we are on a course that is destabilizing, violent, and frightening. And each of us can do our part to be less of that and to be more forgiving, more tolerant, more accepting, and more committed to the furtherance of this great gift that our founders, imperfect though they were, gave us, which is a free country, a prosperous country, and a country that's worth pushing forward in its best possible ways. And I'm hopeful that we can do that, but I'm still sick to my stomach.
Major, as we look at where we are, I read a quote earlier from a conservative writer, Matthew Continetti, who talked about how this death of Charlie Kirk, his assassination, feels like a watershed, highlighting not just political division in our country, but cultural, lifestyle, psychology, epistemology. When you, in your experience, and you're on boots on the ground day to day, looking at the American political environment, do you see elements of hope in the American people that we are not necessarily the very online crowd that seems to suck the oxygen out of the room? Or do you see trends that concern you deeply?
Both. Both. They live in constant conflict. And we had Matthew Continetti on my program last night because he is a wise and able chronicler of our times culturally. He's very familiar with the conservative movement. He's familiar with its wellsprings. Charlie Kirk is a new kind of voice in a conservative movement that Matthew, as he shared with my audience last night, he said, conservatism in America has always had a youthful spirit. He said, many of the most important conservatives of the 1960s and late 70s started in the 1950s. And he went through sort of a name check of that. And he said, Charlie Kirk is part of that history. So I wanted Matthew's voice, not only his longstanding awareness of this, but his eloquence about it. And here's what societies do. They decide what watershed moments are or aren't. I think this has the potential to be a watershed moment. It also has the potential to be part of a banal, repetitive, strident exchange of whataboutism and who to blameism that gets us nowhere and that only corrodes our sense of the underlying humanity and the grief we must feel for a person who exchanged views in public, did so on college campuses, believed what he believed, was courageous about it, and was slaughtered for it. Just as we grieve, I hope still, for the members of the Minnesota legislature who were murdered in their own homes, grieve for Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, whose house was set on fire while he was inside of it. There are other examples that we could all cite. This is not a time for whataboutism. It's not a time for reductive blame shifting. We have to understand there is a fever present in our politics that makes us decide for ourselves that every dispute is civilizational and existential, meaning if we don't get our way, if we don't prevail, something we cherish will perish. That's not what the American experiment is about. The American experiment was a rejection of that very attitude, that power once achieved always was held by the one who achieved it and always at the expense of someone else. The American experiment is about a constant evolution and shifting of power and a sense that that power was harnessed and linked to a set of transformative ideas about equality and liberty, pursuit of happiness, and a constitutional structure that guaranteed not the rights of the majority, but the rights of the minority. And the give and take in there is complex and it's difficult, and you're not always going to be happy with the resolution of a political issue. but you carry forward because the carrying forward is what keeps the experiment going. An experiment that revolutionized the world when it started and continues to revolutionize the world to this day. Though we have doubts about it, we wonder about it sometimes, it is and has been the best experiment for free discourse, liberty, protection of minority rights, religious liberty, and all the rest. We have it. It is a great gift we have been given. It is our obligation to carry it forward.
Major, so the thing that has concerned me going back to last night is, I mean, all the stuff that you're talking about, and what I wanted was for everybody, Republicans, Democrats, to at the same time say, look, we got to tone this down. You know, let's cool it now. Most prominent Democrats I've seen have done that. I think most prominent Republicans that I have seen for the most part have done that, with the exception of some who are saying that the like libs of TikTok, that pretty popular account saying this is war, you know, stuff like that. Do you feel like in Washington, based on what you have seen, the reaction that for the most part people have done that? Or do you think that it's left the door open for, oh gosh, you know, that we're now at war with one another?
Well, it certainly has left the door open for we're at war with one another. My only point is this: for there to be war, there needs to be warriors. Don't be a warrior. Be a warrior for your country, for its preservation, for its civility, for its core belief in itself, that it is worth preserving, even if you don't always get your way. That's one of the great challenges of our country. You don't always get your way. And there is a give and take and a push and pull. And in that push and pull, we by fits and starts move forward as a country. We always have. I net believe we always can. But I will not lie to this audience and tell you that I'm 100% optimistic and is formidable in my native-born American-fueled optimism as I was 10 or 15 years ago. I'm not. There are times I am deeply scared, and scarred. Trust me, it's not easy doing this work, the work that I do, the work I've chosen to do, in moments of massive emotional dislocation, to look into a TV camera and pretend like everything is all right, I'm in control. I'm not in control. I'm as deeply disturbed by this as everyone else is. The obligation of my job is to carry it forward. That's a small price to pay up against everything else I'm describing, but it's the one thing I can do. It's one thing I've chosen to do. But it's harder than it's ever been, and there are times I feel deeply discouraged. I'm just going to be very candid with the audience about that. But I do tell people, as I tell myself, hold that discouragement, hold that sense of fear, hold that sense of anxiety. Don't deny it. Don't suppress it. Don't pretend it doesn't exist, but find a way forward. And I'm trying as much as everyone else is today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think of the poem and the line, things fall apart, the center cannot hold, and how the U.S. has seen a lot and has been on the brink of falling apart and things have held. You mentioned what you've seen in your career, and it has been such a heavy 24 hours. It is also the 24th anniversary of the September 11th attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And do you... I guess, like, just soaking in what we had in the past 24 hours, also remembering where you were 24 years ago.
Yeah, with President Bush in Sarasota, Florida, when the world was turned upside down. And I will say this. They're not related, but they're not unrelated. What happened 24 years ago this morning shattered many things in our country. Shattered a sense of impermeability, a kind of, well, we are safe here, and we shall always remain safe here. And it shattered that sense that we understand the hostilities of the world, and we can cope with the hostilities of the world. That all intruded upon our psyche and left deep, deep scars that are still with us. And they created a kind of new vulnerability. And that new vulnerability, I think, echoes through things that I was talking about a moment ago. Not directly, but they're part of the larger conversation. When, as a nation, you feel vulnerable in ways you've never felt before, you seek protection and you seek answers and things that did not necessarily feel existential to you or civilizational to you do. And that was, I think, one of the many reactions to 9/11. And I think it has cascaded through our own internal domestic politics and the sense that when one is fearful, one wants to know whose side everyone is on. And that sideism has come into our politics. And if you're on the wrong side, maybe you're not just someone who's a fellow American who disagrees with you. You might be an enemy. And that enemization of us as a people, I don't think you can look at 9/11 and say they're utterly unrelated. There's a psychic journey that I think flows through that. I'm not articulating it well. I'm still struggling to try to put some sort of words to it, but I have to believe, and I do believe, that there are things about what was set in motion on 9/11, and those who set 9/11 in motion wanted to tear our country apart. That was their overall goal. Their overall goal wasn't to slaughter their way to the conquest of America. They knew that was impossible. Asymmetric warfare never makes that possible, which terrorism is. But it can set in motion psychic forces that can tear a country apart. And those who were responsible for 9/11 had that as one of their preeminent motives. And I do believe there is something about that that courses through everything we've just discussed the last 5 or 10 minutes.
Major Garrett, the takeout today, anything you want people to know about it?
We're going to do as important a show as we can because this is an important moment. And I hope you'll take it on board because we're going to do our best.
We will. Major Garrett, we appreciate you as always, and we will talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.
Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, Major Garrett, the takeout on CBS News 24/7. You can watch it. You can listen to it as well, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.